Okay, it's 8 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And we'll start with the roll call. Stephanie? Oh, you just heard that.
Wayne Quincia?
Here.
Joyce Dill?
Here.
Bill Crine?
Here.
Mike Smith? Sue Sue?
Here.
Okay, thank you. Are there any additions to the agenda this morning? None?
No.
Okay. Citizen input?
There you got it.
There we go. Thank you for allowing me to address you today, although you probably all have a good idea of what I'm going to say. Since I first addressed you 2 months ago about the lack of choice in day programming providers in Champaign County and the lack of capacity in both day programs and residential housing options in the county, I've been talking with other parents, caregivers, and advocates about how the people we support spend their days and live their lives. I've spoken with about 30 other people, and through my conversations, I've learned that, like me, people want choices for the person they support. And like me, people are frustrated by their lack of choice. I've learned that, like me, people don't understand where the tax money they pay to the 377 board goes and what we get for our money. I've learned that those of us with a person who is a member of the Ligas class need to keep reminding ourselves that court monitor Tony Record says our choices need not be limited to only those services currently provided or offered, that our choices can include services that currently do not exist. At the last board meeting, Ms. Palencia, you shared that many of the wishes of today's supporters of people with ID and DD want the same thing that you wanted back in the 80s. That was four-person group homes, community involvement in jobs, volunteer activities, and community and social activities.
I didn't say quite all that, excuse me.
But this is a time to make the vision from a long time ago come full circle. We all know that government often works very slowly, but here's our chance. Thanks to the establishment of the 377 board and the Ligas consent decree, we now have the opportunity to take that vision from a long time ago, which should be nicely gelled, but hopefully not totally petrified, and reshape it into the 2014 mold. Let's stop responding to the crisis in ID and DD services. It's been going on so long, it's not a crisis anymore. It's just how the state functions, and it doesn't function well. Let's come together as citizens to focus on the kind of future we want. I want my son Jason to live in a group home with other young adults. I want him to be able to spend his day doing things that give him a sense of accomplishments, a sense of self-worth, a sense of value, a feeling of pride. I want him to have variety in his daily schedule, not be locked into the same place and same routine for 6 to 7 hours every weekday. To accomplish this for Jason and for the hundreds of others in Champaign County with ID or DD impairments will not be easy. We all know that. We will need to overcome the fear of members of our community to those with ID and DD. We will need to educate employers that people we support make good employees. I've even had people tell me that with unemployment so high, the jobs should go to a person who really needs it. What? My son would be capable of working only a few hours a month. That leaves plenty of open hours for someone else to work. Yes, that involves paperwork and payroll taxes and all that human HR stuff, and all that aggravation that goes along with running a business. But think of the public relations goodwill an employer would generate. That's priceless. We also need to educate the community that people with ID and DD impairments are people, too. And we need to be one of the best ways, and one of the best ways to begin that education is to be a leader rather than a follower. Let's be a leader for the state in innovative ways to implement Ligas. Let's be a leader in the state for 377 boards. Let's be a leader in the state in modeling change. Let's become the county and the state that everybody wants to emulate. And let's begin by giving our residents with ID and DD some choices. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more citizen input? Could you identify yourself, please, to the microphone?
Hi, we are Frank and Cindy Creighton, and we reside in Mahomet, Illinois. Good morning to everyone. We come this morning to share continued concerns involving the lack of cell service provider options in our county, as well as the lack of services being provided by our local service provider agency. As you know from our most recent email that you all received, our son Jimmy continues to remain in an inappropriate cella environment since May of this year. We were assured this arrangement would only be temporary while a more appropriate four-person or less cella was created for him. His current environment is inappropriate for many reasons. He remains in a 6-to-8-person group home in which he is the only male. Given Jimmy has been left to remain in a female-dominant environment, this is cause for concern. For example, when we were returning Jimmy from a recent home visit one Sunday evening, my husband Frank had directed Jimmy to use the restroom prior to tucking him into bed. Jimmy proceeded to walk to the restroom where the door was standing wide open, and he entered the restroom. When Jimmy walked around the corner, there sat one of the female clients on the commode. Excuse me. Frank had followed behind Jimmy to ensure he had followed his directive. When Frank entered the restroom behind Jimmy and noted the situation, he quickly exited the restroom and directed Jimmy to do the same. There was no indication a female client was in the bathroom sitting on the commode. If Frank had not been there with Jimmy and noted the situation, the outcome would not have been positive. Let us share with you what would have transpired. Jimmy would have walked to and entered the restroom, not knowing the female client was already occupying the restroom, given the door was not closed. Eventually, a staff member would have walked down the hallway to check on Jimmy, only to find him in the bathroom walking around while the female client sat on the commode. Jimmy would automatically have been accused of intentionally entering a restroom where a female client was sitting, and he would have been reprimanded for his actions, regardless of the fact that this female client had not shut the door. It is not appropriate for Jimmy to be forced to live in a group home where he is the only male client. Jimmy continues to be with a population of clients who, for the majority, do not have the ability to verbalize in a manner to which they can carry on a conversation, which means he does not have the opportunity for normal verbal conversation and interaction with other clients. He is forced to rely on conversation with staff only when they have the time to do so. This is not healthy for an individual like Jimmy, who has both the ability and the desire to converse with others. It is detrimental to the well-being of someone like our son to be forced to live in an environment with individuals who cannot verbalize and interact in a normal fashion. This is cause for separation and isolation. And as we shared with you at the previous meeting, Jimmy already exhibits signs of depression, and he has become introverted in many ways, and he will only continue to decline in this environment. Jimmy deserves and must have the opportunity to be with other male clients who suffer with similar disabilities in a smaller environment. Another concern involving Jimmy's current living arrangement in Rantoul involves the lack of vocational and volunteer opportunities. Rantoul is extremely limited in these areas. We recently enlisted the assistance of the Community Choices Organization to assist in securing opportunities for Jimmy in these areas. The majority of access for vocational and volunteer opportunities are in the Champaign-Urbana area. In order for Jimmy to have the privilege of participating in such activities, there must be transportation from Rantoul to Champaign. As you are all aware, Rantoul is not 5 minutes from Champaign-Urbana, and the group home must have the availability of a vehicle to transport Jimmy to and from Rantoul, which is at least 50 to 55 minutes round trip, in addition to the necessity of the group home being without a vehicle for the time it takes to travel to and from Rantoul, in addition to the duration of time that Jimmy would be involved in any activity. If Jimmy had the opportunity to live in the Champaign-Urbana area, this would eliminate the concerns involving transportation and also would allow him a wide array of choices for the vocational and volunteer opportunities that would be suitable for him. At the current time, Jimmy has only one volunteer opportunity available to him in Rantoul, which is only for 1 hour on Monday and Wednesdays. Given Jimmy has been denied the opportunity for any involvement with the DSC Day program, regardless of the fact that he did receive enhanced funding for a one-on-one assistant, which we were told by DSC would be a necessity for him to even be considered for their day program, his days are empty, aside from the job that he performs for that 1 hour duration on Monday and Wednesday mornings. This is absolutely unacceptable and unexcusable. In our recent email communication, we shared that we had received notification that Trinity Services, a solar provider out of Chicago, would be willing to serve Jimmy, but not in Champaign-Urbana. It was indicated they would be willing to serve Jimmy in the Chicago area or Peoria. As you are all aware, we declined this offer. And as you also know, Jimmy was already forced to live away from his family in Wisconsin for 6.5 years. It is not his choice to be sent away again, nor is it our choice. Jimmy wants to reside in Champaign-Urbana so he can live close to his family and be able to take advantage of the many social, recreational, vocational, and volunteer opportunities available to him and other people with developmental disabilities. We continue to believe our county tax dollars are not being dispersed and utilized by our local service provider in an effective manner that is allowing for expansion of services from both a vocational and a residential aspect. We, as well as others in the community, also continue to believe there has not been appropriate accountability on the part of our local service provider in sharing detailed information in regard to how our tax dollars have truly been utilized in regard to improving and expanding SILA services to individuals with developmental disabilities. We have a community here that has all the resources that it needs to provide the support and care that people with more challenging behavioral and medical needs require, and even those with appropriate enhanced funding, such as our son Jimmy. The state is willing to provide whatever funding necessary for Jimmy's needs, for his needs to be met. If Jimmy and other individuals have funding available, and the community resources are here to provide those appropriate supports, what is stopping our community from doing what is right and serving these people? Our local provider has made the decision to not provide these services, and they've made that very clear to some, although we have yet to receive appropriate communication from our local provider sharing with Frank and I why they continue to inappropriately deny these services to our son, regardless of the fact the state is willing to provide the necessary funding to enable that purpose. It is up to this board, who is funding this local service provider agency with our tax dollars, to address that issue and investigate what it will take to help support another service provider to come to our community to provide both the day programming and residential programming that is necessary to meet the needs. It is not acceptable for this board to turn a blind eye to the needs of people with more challenging developmental needs just because it is difficult or does not meet the vision of one agency. It is their duty as public servants to look at the needs of this population, every population, not just the needs of those that the current agencies choose to serve. What will it take to build comprehensive services for all people with developmental disabilities in our community? We urge this board to please do what is right and make this your priority. Thank you for your time this morning and allowing us to speak.
Thank you. Is there any other citizen input? Okay, input from the Mental Health Board.
I just wanted to remind everyone that there is no Mental Health Board meeting this month, but there is a reception for a retiring board member, Dr. Ernie Gullerud, which will be this afternoon at 4:30 at, what is it, Piatro's? Is it? Piatto's, okay. It's located in Lincoln Square, and would like to invite everyone here to drop by and wish Ernie well. He's been a wonderful board member and has done a lot of great service for this community. That's about it.
Okay, thank you. We need to approve the minutes of the November meeting. So, did I have a motion? We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
I second.
Second. Any corrections to that, those minutes? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. President's comments are next. I just wanted to report that Joyce Suter and I attended the quarterly meeting of ACMI, the Association of Community Mental Health Alliances of Illinois. Other boards, representatives of other boards like ours, and mental health boards, and Peter and Lynn were also there. And I thought it was very interesting to hear what other communities are offering, how much money they have to work with, what their problems are, and I think it's very good for us to be part of that conversation. So that's all I have as far as comments go. We also heard Kevin Casey, the Director of Disabilities, speak to some issues. Did you want to say anything about that? No?
Thanks. Other than the director was, I think, was very interesting on the updates, the LIGAS, the waiver, and Peter is president, chair of the whole organization, and the director mentioned that he wants to have ongoing conversations and updates. So that gives us another way, I think, to get into some of these issues that have been addressed.
Okay, Peter, we'll move to any comments you have now.
Well, I would like to thank the board members that attended that meeting. That would be Elaine and Sue Suter. I think it's really important in this particular time in Illinois with all of the changes that are going on in intellectual and developmental disabilities for us to establish and at the local 377 and 708 boards, a relationship with the DHS Division of Developmental Disabilities. And we did have the opportunity to discuss and talk about our concerns about the CILA capacity issues that Cindy mentioned and Barb mentioned. That is a statewide problem. And the director is interested in attempting to address that problem. And we talked about some of the barriers that we've heard from providers related to what's involved with creating new facilities. And I won't go into all of those things, but I think that the director is interested in working with us, and we're to the extent that we can help encourage and incentivize the creation of additional CILAs for all people. Because I'll speak for myself here. We haven't actually made this a public policy statement, but I believe that anybody that is from Champaign County, ought to be, that wants to live here ought to be able to live in Champaign County. And I, you know, it disturbs me to hear that the only thing you can do is go to Chicago, because that isn't our community. So we want to encourage, or I want to encourage, the development of appropriate resources. And if you remember in the last packet in November, there was a note that I sent to Tony Records that had to do with the capacity issues. And Lynn, in looking at the PUNS list, we, you know, there's about 120 people that are currently on the list that are from our county that are waiting for SILA services. And we need to expand that capacity. There's no question about that. The last thing I would like to mention about that meeting, we also had, I want to thank Vicki Nicewander, who in wearing the hat of her association of microboards and cooperatives, came and did a presentation. And, you know, we're trying to get our association to connect up with other associations, provider associations, and other trade associations that have an interest in developmental disabilities, because, you know, Kevin Casey admit, you know, we're like 48th in the country in terms of what we're doing for developmental disabilities, and we need to do better than that. The last thing I would like to mention in my comments has to do with we are planning the retreat for January 25th, and we spent some time with, I'm terrible about her last name, Elizabeth Parishon, is the person who's going to be the facilitator of the meeting. We spent some time talking to her. Elaine and I were involved in that conversation, and we were, you know, we think that one thing that we want that to prepare for this that would be helpful would be to have a clearer understanding of what is within the scope of this board's responsibility. What are the things that we, you know, what are the problems we can tackle and what are the problems we can't tackle? To the extent, you know, like, for example, the issue of SILA and the development of SILA, and this is my opinion, is a state issue. It's all Medicaid that funds it. And to some degree, if you mix local money into that, it actually muddies the water and actually could make people not eligible for Medicaid. I think it would be important for us to clarify what are the limits of our responsibility. And that's not to say that we don't have a responsibility to advocate, to do what we can to incentivize the development of resources. But I think that it would be good for us to present a clearer picture of what are the limits and the scope of our responsibilities so that the public understands exactly what we can and can't do. So anyway, I think we would like to encourage everybody to come to the retreat. It will be at the I Hotel on January 25th. It will be posted as an open public meeting because we can't meet and have meetings without folks being present. And everybody is welcome to attend. It would be nice to know who's coming so that we could have some idea of, we have coffee and things like that, so we want to make it a comfortable time for everybody. So if you can let us know if you're planning to come, that would be great. And I think it'll offer a good opportunity for us to kind of talk informally about what's best for this community. And that's it, Madam President.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Staff report.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to be starting at about 8:15 in the morning, there will be some refreshments at that point, and then the actual meeting will start at 9:00. So you can stumble in at 9:00 if you want, or you can show up at 8:15, which, you know, and enjoy a little bit of fellowship prior to the meeting.
All day or 1:00?
No, 1:00. 1:00 or when it ends. No later than 1:00.
Okay.
And Peter, I also, that will give us an opportunity, the retreat, to get some specifics in terms of addressing some of these issues.
That would be good.
I think that will be very helpful to get some next steps and some action items.
Okay. Lynn, do you have a staff report?
Since the staff report, we had that meeting with Elizabeth Parashon, and we, because the time, I mean, technically the meeting starts at 9, but because we're all going to be there at 8:15, I redid the schedule, and that's available at that, down there, because the DDB meeting schedule has been posted in previous board packets, so I want to make sure that people have access to the revision, and that's been posted everywhere. So otherwise, I think, I don't know if there's anything else to add to the packet, to the staff report that's in the packet, except we had a really good demonstration yesterday of the reimbursement tracking system that's in use in Proviso Township, and it really looked, it was attractive. It would actually change, if we did it just exactly like they're doing, it would change some of what we ask for, but I think it might be an improvement over what we asked for, maybe. So we've just started talking about it, but now that we've all seen it, we can have those conversations. It was really kind of exciting. So.
Okay.
Go ahead. Lynn, on the first, on the quarterly report paragraph, the 449 individuals in funded program services other than family development and Head Start. So that
I didn't count those because those are like thousands of young children who are
okay, that's what
typically
I thought.
Those are assessments that also can include some longer term therapies, but I didn't use them in the count. This is the 449 is an unduplicated number. It does include some young people, but they're being served in programs which also serve adults. And it also includes people from Down Syndrome Network, but I didn't have a report from autism, so about young people attending their meetings or adults attending their meetings. So it's still a work in progress, but I thought it was good information. It's the first time we've seen that, an unduplicated number of persons in adult services.
Thank you, that helps.
I have one more thing to tell you, and that's actually related to later in the agenda. There's a comment about the draft 1115 paper being due tomorrow, and then some stakeholder meetings tomorrow and Friday. Friday's the one that we could actually listen in on, but that's been postponed because the draft waiver itself isn't available yet. Surprisingly. There are bound to be all kinds of stakeholder meetings, but the ones which might be of interest to us are going to be scheduled in the week of January 6th. So if I get that information, I'll share it with you. So we have a little more time to read the comments, and similarly, we have an updated version of ACMI's comments, and so those are also available at the end of the table, and you have them on at your seat.
You have another, I get the light on here. I guess we have too many microphones.
Okay. There it goes. I do have another question for you, Lynn. Michael, I think, had sort of alluded to this last time as well. We're getting the monthly update of data from the PUNS list, and of course all the numbers are growing. Do you have any sense, is that because people are becoming more aware and are signing up, or is it because of something else going on?
I do not have details on that, but I'm guessing that that's part of it. I think also people, you know, more and more people graduate from high school every year, and if they're not getting served, that number is likely growing just because it really is growing. But I think you're right that it's possible more people are getting enrolled who should have been enrolled a long time ago. So, and there have been some changes at the PASS agency and just this month, which could result in more new enrollments. So it could start to look like a greater need, but in my opinion, it may just be a better representation of the unmet need. So,
Lynn, what are the changes at the PASS agency?
Well, we heard a little prediction of it from Kevin Casey.
If you can share.
Yeah, Kevin Casey is talking to them about changing their contract.
Okay.
They just don't know when that's going to occur, but they will have significantly expanded duties, and there's no word on whether they'll have expanded personnel. And so there are some personnel changes. I think Darlene Kleppel, who's been the program supervisor, is now much more involved with the program, and they're trying to prepare themselves for possibly an influx of more underfunded mandate. So
okay.
Not a great situation, but if he can get the money for it somehow, then maybe it will improve their performance.
Actually, just to add to that, Director Casey was talking about the expansion of more case management responsibilities for the PASS agents, and he said it wouldn't be additional unfunded mandates. That, you know, at least he made that commitment
to us.
To us, yeah, I guess.
Any other comment at this point on the packet, anything? Okay, we need to approve the claims that are included in the board packet of the financial report.
Sorry, agency Whoa. Information.
Oh, I thought, oh, that was staff. Boy, I never get it right, do I? Because I looked at that and I thought I've heard all these agency people talking and thought that was it. All right, yes, of course, agency information. Do we have comments or news from agents?
Just an update from Community Choices. Mm-hmm. Now that we're 5 years old, we are mm-hmm. starting a process of accreditation. And so we were told by DRS, which is the vocational, that we had to be accredited. So we started that process, and then last week they decided you didn't have to be accredited, but we are going forward anyway because we think it'll be helpful. So we are going to use the Council on Quality and Leadership. They're a national accrediting body. And what's exciting about it is that they do basic assurances to make sure you're not hurting anybody, but then they focus a lot on personal outcome measures. So we're hoping we can actually learn some things through them. And we'll be happy to share as we learn of what they're telling us that we're doing wrong. So just wanted to update you on that. And then the other thing is that I was at a conference last week, the TASH conference, and learned about a potential funding opportunity. IFF, which is a nonprofit developing lender, so they've lent to nonprofits for a long time, but they are actually working with the state to potentially purchase 4-bed CILAs and could have an opportunity for them to own the housing and for providers to provide the services. So I think they're hoping to have 50 homes across the state, and not sure if Champaign County is part of that right now, but just want to let you know that that might be an opportunity.
Thank you. Other, go ahead.
Can I just ask a question? Jennifer, how would we follow up on that? the IFF?
Yeah, I can give you the contact person. Tara Peel is it's Home First Illinois is the part of IFF that this is under. And so, again, it's new territory for them as well to actually be in the ownership business. They've been in the lending business so far. But, yeah, I'd be happy to send on her contact info.
Yes.
Dale Morrissey with Developmental Services Center. I wrote just a couple notes because sometimes you guys know I have a tendency to get long.
No.
So I just thought I'd, first of all, I really wanted to stress some of the things we'll talk about today, that we're all in this together, and tell you a little bit about what DSC is doing, and just one challenge of the many, so we talk about how we're working through that. And we've been working tirelessly at the state level to advocate for rates that support the needs of individuals and families, and also provide a competitive wage for our direct service professionals, and that's the major challenge I want to talk to you about today. I also want to share with you a few examples of what we've been doing with families for the past 18 months. Prior to the Ligas consent decree, DSC was serving 6 or 7 families under the home-based support awards, and now we're serving 49. 23 of which we're doing just service facilitation, and 26 we're doing expanded developmental training, vocational, or apartment support services. Over the past two years, we've also been able to serve 5 additional people in our CILA program. One of those individuals is a 60-year-old lady who is, has been in state institution for the past 48 years of her life, and now she's thriving and loving her new home. She has her own bedroom for the first time, and in the past few weeks, she received her first paycheck ever. So residentially, we've made a concerted effort over the last several years to do private bedrooms, move to be smaller and private bedrooms. At this time, 45 of our 52 people have their own bedroom. Some of those that remain, by the way, express the need because they want to live with a roommate. And so we're still working toward that because we do believe people should have their private room in smaller settings. Last April, we were pretty pleased. We opened, as I think we shared with you, our first small, when I call small, three-bedroom Scylla, which is a condo. But we weren't able to open that until August, and that goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, because of delays in to be able to staff that home. Because of the wages, the current challenges with the wages, the rates that are there, we all talk about limitations moving forward. That's the key in that area, so we can talk about everybody. We had to wait from April to August to open that home. The home's wonderful. Three people, they're thriving. It's just really, really doing well. We have been meeting and listening with many families to work actively at the state level to get past these funding regulatory limitations so that smaller individual living situations and the concept of employment first can be implemented for all. As I said, we're currently in an extremely challenging position due to the extremely low state reimbursement rates for residential and day services. It's becoming very difficult for us to attract and maintain qualified applicants for direct service positions. We recognize that we must safely meet the needs of those we're currently serving before we can expand further. That's what happened with the delay in opening the condo. We had enough vacancies in our other homes that we had to have safe staff-to-client ratios, or we would have been able to open it sooner. It took us months to do that. At one time, a couple weeks ago, I think we had 12 vacancies, and that's unprecedented in the past 20 years. So we got to be able to make sure that as we expand, and we do intend to expand, and so, but we have to do that safely. So when you're hearing me say that we're putting a temporary hold on expansion, we're working with a lot of areas to expand, both in day program and the Scylla movement. We got to be able to make sure that when we take people, we can do that safely, because once we have them, we plan to serve them and be that safety net for them. So we need to have that adequate support. So we're going to continue to work with consumers, families, advocates, politicians, state officials, you, and anyone else to continue to address these situations so that working together we can hopefully keep moving this forward as fast as we possibly can. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Gail, if you could name three things that would be at the top of your list systemically that we need to do, what would they be? For, like, I hear you say rates.
Well, we have a capacity issue overall. I mean, you know, Ligas is wonderful, but again, in fact, other than the creation of the Developmental Disability Board locally, I think Ligas is one of the greatest things for people with developmental disabilities. It's happened a long time, but because it's being implemented in the fairest way they can, but some people that have urgency greater sooner are not being met in that need because it's being done, you know, when you're drawn out. And so I think just overall capacity, it's besides rates, you know, when you have depressed rates for a real, real long time, you try to do business within those rates, so it's not just the ability to hire, but we deserve, people that we're serving, we deserve a higher level, and this sounds terrible. We have fantastic people at DSC, and there's fantastic service providers every place here, and family support, but they deserve a higher wage. You know, we shouldn't be paying people at $22,000 a year. We need people that, you know, what is a fair wage? Should it be, but I believe it should be $3 an hour, higher than that, $27,000, $28,000, so we can have people that will safely, professionally serve our people. So it's wages, it's having competent professionals, and it's having a capacity. We can't grow fast enough. Now it's wonderful what we're saying with Ligas, but when we're setting expectations up for families that are very real and should be there. Well, it's not unrealistic to be able to live in your home community, to have a single bedroom. Those are all real things. But to change that quickly when the rates have not adjusted to do that, to continue to tell families to ask for things, put the money there too. Don't just give the individual rates, but put it as a service capacity that people can be safely served with quality professional people. And or support the models of community choices or the microboards so that people truly can have supported rates to do, provide their own support service. It doesn't have to be just the provider model. So that's quickly, I think I covered three things.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, any other agency input here? And now we get to the financial report and the need to approve the claims that are in the board packet. Could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
So moved. A second?
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion or questions on the motion? Then all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the claims are approved. And so in new business, Peter has covered one of them, but the notification is in your packet of the 2015 funding availability that will go out, so you can look at that in the packet. And the reception has been mentioned for Dr. Gillerud. Any comment on these or any new business that isn't here? No? Okay, so we can move to old business. And Peter has mentioned the retreat, January 25th. And so is there any question about that? Any addition? Yes.
What are the goals of the retreat?
I think that's one of the things that's going to be set is early on in it, right? But you can speak to maybe that
yeah,
better, Peter.
We're just in the process of talking about that at this point and working on it. And so we're open to any goals you would like to add. But right now, we thought it would be useful to have an overview of, to give an overview of what federal, state, and local money is being used for and how those work together. And to also go over all of the changes to give information about the changes that are happening in Illinois related to ID and DD services, and that includes the 1115 waiver, the Medicaid, the issues of Medicaid. And then through that, we would hopefully give more information about where this board fits into that broader system. Then we also thought it would be a good opportunity for the board to talk about the issues that are being presented to us, the issues we're hearing in, you know, in public comment, the issues that providers raise concerning the problems with capacity, and then to try to figure out where we are and what we can do to help with those kinds of issues. I think Mr. Morrissey's comment that we're all in this together, I think we are all in this together, and we need to be working together to figure out how to manage things here. Anyway, that's kind of where we are at this point. We have a good facilitator who I think mm-hmm. will be able to record, get us to kind of talk about it. And she's one of these that likes to have things written down, so we're going to have somebody keeping track of things. And my personal goal is I would like to see us come out of this with some policy positions related to IDDD within the scope of what we can do. But as I said, we're still planning. Anything that anybody has, just email them. We'd love to hear from you, Sheila.
Anything else on the retreat? Okay, we also need to approve the decision memo for the allocation criteria for fiscal year 2015. There was a draft in the packet in November, and so that language has been incorporated I noticed another thing that was done. We had quite a bit of discussion on the priorities that seemed, because they were enumerated, to be ranked. So those numbers have been taken off so they don't look like one is privileged over another. I think that was a good change that Phil helped us look at. So I need a motion to approve the memo now in this form.
I move we accept it.
Second.
Second. Any corrections, comments, anything, discussion?
I just want to thank the staff. I think you all did a great job of incorporating vision, values, and making it specific. I just want to commend the staff.
Just a quick, you know, I would also like to thank the board's participation in this. Actually, Phil did the initial cut on the changes, and it was helpful. And then we did a little wordsmithing, but I think we captured what everybody wanted. So, thank you.
It's interesting to watch it evolve over time, because this is sort of the same document but different every time as we refine the vision. So. I like to see it from year to year and what new ideas come into it. All right, so any more comment? Then that is, we need to vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And under old business, also, there's quite a few comments from other agencies on the concept paper for the 1115 waiver. A number of agencies have presented their worries, I guess, and gaps they see. And wow, if you look at that and all the things that the little gaps that have been little and some big that have been pointed out by agencies and worries they have, it's wow, it's still quite a ways to go before or if it's possible to include everything with a real concrete plan forward on the 1115 waiver. So do you have anything to say about those, or does anyone?
Well, I think that the 1115 waiver is one of those areas that we just, you know, as this unfolds this year, this will have a huge impact on services. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm pretty dubious about it, because when you read the concept paper, you see the direct mention of the hospitals and the nursing homes. And then they say, as Mike Smith pointed out last time, in the first paragraph it says that this is to save money. But then later it says that the 1115 is supposed to be budget neutral. So how can you be budget neutral and save money at the same time? There's a wonderful website that you should go to if you haven't, the Illinois Political Reform website that essentially the Sunshine Project, which shows where money goes. And I just happened to kind of glance at who were contributors to Governor Quinn. And I see a big amount of money there from the Illinois Hospital Association. I don't see anything there from any IDDD agencies or PACs. There aren't any IDD PACs, you know. So, you know, it worries me to see the hospitals mentioned so prevalently, and then they talk about providing financial incentives for the hospitals to downsize. No discussion about financial incentives for ICFDDs to downsize or to create additional 4-bed CILAs. So, you know, I'm a little worried about it. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Okay. Our next item, board announcements. Are there any board announcements? Nothing else? I think we've come to the end of our meeting then.
Maybe not. One of the things that, oops, is that on?
You're on.
Yeah, okay. One of the things that I would like to comment on, Dale, you were talking about the pay for folks who do the work that we all want to be done. And I can attest to you as a parent, I'm at my son's group home at least once a week. Actually, that's all I'm at his group home is once a week. But I wanted to say that the folks who work there, they are some of the best people. I enjoy having a relationship with them because one of the things that I know is that if you can really see what's going on, you end up with a much better idea of how Acela works. And if I could advocate for one thing at this point, it would be to raise the pay of the people who work giving us the services that we as parents and we as community members want. My daughter just went to work for the Arc of Maryland. I know how much she makes. And I also know that what she does on a daily basis is extremely important. They are mentors. They do much, much work that we don't even think of at some points. I can walk in on Friday to pick up my son to come home for the weekend. I see what they're doing. They're cooking the meal. They're making sure that everyone is accounted for and what they're doing and how it works and trying to get people to interact together. It is not an easy job. It is something that you have to be on your toes with every day. So I just wanted to reiterate, I appreciate everything that people do to support those in our community, in our county, who really need the help. And I'm very proud of what agencies do in this community with the very little amount of money that they get without actually begging for it. So, and yet they're not afraid to beg for it if they need to. And unfortunately, it looks like we'll be doing that for a long time. Hopefully, we're going to get better funding. I would hope that the waiver is something that scares me. I think I spoke to that issue in the last meeting. But be assured that everyone, every agency that we fund is doing the very best with a little amount of money. They are. They're doing the best that they can. And I just wanted to be sure that somebody said that. So I did.
Okay. Any other final comments before we close? Okay. I believe we're adjourned then.
Thank you.
Specific agencies, everything we have is open for you to look at.
Thank you.